to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy. Hello, listeners. It's been really exciting as we do these podcasts. It might be premature to say we're going viral, but we really have seen a considerable uptick in the numbers of downloads. So we hope that you will go to wherever you get your podcasts from and do the sort of things that let other people know about it, which is to say, rate us and comment. And if you see our posts on social media, on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, feel free to respond to those things, because that's how people are finding out about this podcast. And we're really enjoying the feedback that we're getting.
Mm-hmm. And thank you to all our listeners who've helped and have been spreading the word and telling your friends. And it's just been very gratifying.
Indeed. As we generally mention in these podcasts, this podcast, The Couples Therapy in 7 Words, is based on a formula that comes from or is the basis of a book that came out a few months ago that I wrote called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. So we hope you will check out the book. It's available in whatever format, your favorite format these days. You can actually get it on paper, and you can get it on Kindle, and you can get it as an Audible book as well. So, Judy, tell us about the topic for today.
Okay, so today's topic is three kinds of faith.
Three kinds of faith, and that is actually taken from one of the chapters in the aforementioned book.
So in the book, you talk about three kinds of faith. So what are the three kinds, and why do those kinds of faith matter in a relationship?
Well, great questions. So the reason I talk about three kinds of faith, first of all, I suppose I should reiterate what I mean by faith at all. We did a podcast on this a few weeks ago, and you're welcome to check that out as well. But my simple, not particularly religious definition of faith, it's not inconsistent with religion, but it's not based on a religious definition. My definition of faith is when you accept that reality is right. And by right, I mean that it's an orientation to the world. It's like you encounter things that are difficult or painful or unjust or whatever they are, and recognize, indeed, our job as people is to do better as much as we can and try and fix the things that are wrong. But underneath all of it, there is a fundamental rightness to reality. You know, even the things that are difficult have their basis in a universe that's just right to be what it is. That's what I mean by an orientation toward faith. And as I've commented before, it's not something you can prove. It isn't something that requires data to prove or disprove. I'm saying, no, this orientation doesn't have anything to do with proving it. It just has to do with how you approach the world. Mm-hmm. But it makes a profound difference in how you experience things that come up, particularly painful things that come up. And so, you know, the overall question, why does faith matter in relationships in general, is because in the context of important relationships, that's where a bunch of course, a bunch of wonderful things will happen, but also a bunch of painful things are apt to happen, precisely because relationships are so important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a good reiteration of faith. So now let's talk about what are the three kinds of faith in relationships.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about this, I'm realizing there's three different types that are all important, and they play out a lot in relationships. So the three kinds that I talk about are, first of all, faith in your own validity. The second kind is faith in your ability to handle what happens. And the third kind is faith in the big picture. So let me talk about each of those three, and you can see how they relate together, and okay, we'll see how they relate to relationships too. So faith in your own validity implies that you're not a mistake. Nobody's a mistake. You know, really, when I say faith in your own validity, that also implies faith in everybody else's basic validity as a human being. You know, in Jewish terms, this is the idea of being B'Tselem Elohim, which is to say, in the image of God. We are all valid to be what we are. I'm not saying everything we do is right, obviously not. But we are all valid, essentially valid to be what we are. And when you have faith in your own validity, that's what allows you to recognize what you want, what you don't want. It allows you to act with essential integrity. You can object to something you need to object to, or you can examine your own behavior without dissolving into shame. You know, shame is one of the things that gets in the way of this. One of the residues that happen as a result of especially childhood abuse is this deep feeling of shame that you're not a valid person. And that makes it very difficult to carry on a relationship because, among other things, it means you're constantly seeking validation from external sources, from your partner especially, from the world in general. And, you know, it is one of my favorite little paradoxes that if you don't feel a sense of validation, if you don't feel that you're valid to be who you are, then you'll keep looking for it everywhere else and you'll never find enough evidence.
Yeah, yeah. So what if you don't have this good self-image or, you know, have enough faith in your own validity? How do you get that?
Well, that's, of course, a lot of what therapy is, among many other things. A lot of what therapy is intimate encounters. I mean that obviously in a non-sexual sense, but intimate encounters with someone who is viewing you deeply as valid. Mm-hmm. You know, and not to cast aspersions on any of my colleagues, but if you're with a therapist who doesn't seem to think that people in general are valid and you specifically are valid, you're with the wrong therapist and they're in the wrong line of work. It's really, I think, essential that anybody trying to help anybody else have this fundamental sense that we're all valid. Now, again, that doesn't mean they're going to approve of everything you do or say. It just means that mm-hmm. there's this basic sure. sense of validity. And, you know, the other piece of my paradox, I said, if you keep looking for validation, if you need it, you're never going to find enough. Conversely, when you do experience yourself as fundamentally valid, flawed, of course, we're all flawed, we all mess up, but fundamentally valid, when you experience yourself that way, you'll see evidence of it all over the place. You'll see it reflected in other people. You'll see it, you know, even when you've messed up, you'll be able to make a decent apology because it won't be this question of annihilating yourself because you said you messed up. It's, mm-hmm. It really takes a very solid sense of your own validity to be able to even do something like apologize for when you've messed up. So that's what I mean by faith in your own validity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it starts with that because the absence of that makes it very difficult to have the other kinds of faith. So what was the second kind of faith? The second kind of faith is faith in your ability to handle what happens. And, you know, a one-word summary of that is resilience. The idea that we're all resilient to some extent. I'm not saying everybody can get up from everything. I'm just saying we all have that capability to manage difficulties somehow. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the somehow is. You know, part of that faith that we can handle what happens is realizing that some things are going to be really difficult and may remain that way. But something about the whole picture means we are equipped to do what we can do. And that is that second kind of faith. And, you know, how that plays out in relationships, you better have that when you're with a partner that you love and are deeply attached to, because since we're all human beings and all, you know, capable of messing up, we're going to mess up on occasion and, sure. you know, I'm going to hurt you or you're going to hurt me. And I'd better not be so panicked at the thought of threatening a relationship that I'm paralyzed and can't do anything to make it better or can't do anything to handle what comes up. And what lets me not panic, and look, this is a general statement I've said in the whole 7-word formula. I guess we haven't mentioned the 7-word formula today, have we? So
I don't think we have.
Judy, so tell us the 7-word formula.
Okay. Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Exactly. Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And of course, it's in that order because you can't be kind if you're panicking. Mm-hmm. And the antidote to panic is faith. And that's exactly what I'm talking about in terms of resilience. Mm-hmm. If you have faith that you're equipped to handle what life throws at you, even when it's really hard, then at least you won't panic. I'm not saying you won't feel anxiety. I'm just saying you won't panic. And that plays out in such a daily basis with couples. And, you know, I work with lots of couples, as probably most people listening to this podcast realize. And in my work with couples, it is so common that what happens that brings them into therapy, what happens that has them dealing with stuff that they really want some help to deal with, is not so much that they might do something to hurt each other or cause some kind of discomfort or raise somebody's anxiety. I mean, that's a common phenomenon. But what happens is they trigger each other because they start to panic about each other's reactions. Mm-hmm. And that makes it virtually impossible to get any place.
Sure.
So that idea that you have faith and resilience, you know, we don't know how it's going to turn out, but we'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
That is an important part of faith. And then the third part of faith, what I call faith in the big picture. That sense, that's really kind of the overall statement I was talking about before, about faith in general, when you accept that reality is right.
Mm-hmm.
The whole picture's right, and that means that my place in it, even if I can't figure it out, you know, people say, well, what's your purpose in life, or what meaning do you take? I probably can't write that on a bumper sticker, right? And I don't think, you don't have to be able to write it on a bumper sticker. The point isn't to be able to summarize it in you know, seven words, for example.
Well, let's hope not. You can put your whole purpose on a bumper sticker.
Exactly. But the fact that there is a purpose there, the fact that life is meaningful, that's mm-hmm. what I mean by faith. And again, that's not something provable.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you start with as an axiom. In other words, you say, well, I'm going to, as an act of will, decide that life must be meaningful. And that will change how I orient myself toward the world. And that's, you know, the sort of leap of faith that sometimes people talk about. It's not suddenly leaping of faith and saying, well, I know everything will turn out okay because God is good and God's going to take care of me, you know?
Which some people do, actually.
Which some people do. And I'm not trying to object to that per se. Mm-hmm. But if what that implies, you know, there's some of those same people tell the, you know, the classic story of the person who's in a flood. And they, you've probably heard this one,
mm-hmm.
right? Where so somebody comes along in a boat and says, hey, get in, the waters are rising. And the person says, no, no, God will take care of me. And then the waters are rising further. And, you know, somebody comes by with a bigger boat and they say, get in, you know. And finally, somebody comes by with a helicopter and they say, no, no, God will take care of me. And of course, they end up dying in this story and they go up to heaven. And they basically say to, you know, whoever your favorite host is in heaven, be it St. Peter or God or whoever you want to say. And they say, hey, what's the deal? I thought you'd take care of me. And, you know, God or St. Peter or whoever says, hey, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. What do you want? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that recognition that, of course, we are partners in the project.
Right.
And, you know, I can't resist noting something interesting. The date we're doing this happens to be August 21st of 2020, for those of you who may be listening to this at some other time, happens to be the day after Joe Biden gave his acceptance speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed. here I am revealing my political proclivities. I don't think that would be much of a surprise to people listening to this broadcast. But the one of the things he said was, hey, there aren't miracles coming. Now, he is a deeply religious man.
Right.
And he didn't mean, oh, you know, don't believe in God at all. He meant we have to act
mm-hmm.
so as to do things that we are capable of doing. That is a gift of God.
That's right. We're partners in this.
We are partners
in this. So whether it's partners with God or partners with each other,
absolutely.
We're in it together, and we have to, you know, we can't rely on others to make things happen. So,
and so what that ends up meaning, and again, you can perhaps see why this is so crucial in relationships, that means that an attitude of faith, as I'm describing it, is the opposite of an attitude of dreary resignation.
Mm.
You know, it's not like, well, I'll just give up and, you know, whatever is God's will. And look, I'm not knocking the notion of God's will being central.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that that doesn't mean you give up and don't participate. There is no such thing
right.
as not participating.
Right. And I think under that, the third faith in the big picture for purpose, I think you also touch on gratitude in that section as well.
I do, because what happens is when you have, well, really all three kinds of faith, but particularly culminating in that one, you know, when you have faith in the big picture, then what do you do if you encounter something really painful and really difficult? And again, especially in a relationship context, and here I will foreshadow a bit, we're going to have a listener question in a few moments that will be really touching on this concept quite a bit. You encounter something really difficult, and the idea of faith would say that if you have faith, you're going to figure out something and you're going to get through it one way or another. That when you do that, gratitude is a natural reaction. It's a story I've told to many, many couples. And, you know, I'm always very careful when I tell stories from my work not to identify anybody, and this would not identify anybody, but this is one of those stories that, you know, usually I'm so careful to combine things and disguise things that no one of my actual clients would ever recognize themselves. Mm-hmm. This is an exception. The actual people who were involved in this, if they hear this, you know, hello, folks, if you're hearing this, and I don't think they'll mind, because they've told me that, actually. I don't think they would mind. I'm not about to identify them, obviously, but I don't think they would mind my telling this story. And I've told it frequently because it's such an interesting one, I find. This was a couple where there had been infidelity, and they had done amazing amounts of really difficult, intense work getting hold of themselves, facing the realities, all the stuff that I talk about that is an attitude of faith, mm-hmm. that they weren't just going to say, oh, you know, forget about it and move on. They were really engaged and with great courage, both of them with great courage. And it was about a year, year and a half, something like that, after we first started working, which, you know, let you know, this is not often quick work. And the man had been the one who had been unfaithful, and the woman, they were sitting on my couch in my office back in the days when we had offices and couches and actually saw people in person. Remember those days, folks? We're in the middle of the pandemic, for those of you listening to this later. Anyway, she turned to him and she said, hey, thanks for taking one for the team. And he looked at her and I looked at her and he said, gee, what do you mean by that? You know? And she said, well, you're the one who had to feel guilty. Now, and which of course is accurate. It's like, yeah, she wasn't saying, oh, it was okay that you cheated on me because look how much better off we are now. She wasn't saying that. She was saying, and had said quite explicitly before that, she was saying, I'm grateful for what we've had to go through because our marriage is so much better now. Mm-hmm. And I myself, she said of herself, I myself am better off for this. You know, it's really painful that it happened the way it happened, but sure. I'm better off for having gone through this struggle. And so that was this amazing gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that's a direct result. That's what I call faith.
Yeah. Yeah. So that takes us to our listener question. And we have a question today from Alan. And Alan writes, Dear Dr. Chalmer, I read your book, Reigniting the Spark. Thank you, Alan. Hoping to find some ideas about how to get my relationship with my wife back on track. We've been married for 16 years, have two school-age kids, and seemingly everything was okay, but we just haven't been connecting intimately for quite a while now. Your ideas about stability and intimacy seem spot on. We've spent so much time and energy raising the kids and doing our jobs and running the house that we seem to have lost contact with each other. Well, a few days ago, I found out my wife has been having one-on-one time with a male coworker, lunches, walks, and Zoom calls. She says it's platonic, no sex involved, but she's been doing it for months and never mentioned it. I only found out about it because a mutual friend had seen them and asked me if I knew about it because it looked to her as if they were at least emotionally involved. Part of me just wants to believe her that this isn't an affair and not to worry about it, to just accept that for her this isn't cheating. But something about it feels wrong. She says I need to look at my toxic jealousy. Am I wrong to be bothered by this? I love my wife and don't want to lose my marriage. What should I do?
Yeah, great question, indeed. Mm. Yeah, so, of course, I think when we did our other podcast introducing the concept of faith, we had a question, and I was inviting a similar question right now, like, what does this have to do with faith, you mm-hmm. know? But, of course, I picked out this question, like I did the other one. I picked out this question because I think this has everything to do with faith. Because, you know, if you just boil this down to, I think his wife is asking a good question, you know, that notion of toxic jealousy. Mm-hmm. There is such a thing, I think. I mean, you know, it's not always obvious to distinguish that from something that somebody would say, hey, I don't think it's toxic. I think I have a right to feel this way.
Yeah, but she also might be using that as a defense mechanism because she really is emotionally involved with this coworker.
Well, exactly. And of course, you know, the key here is she'd been doing it for months and never mentioned it. Mm-hmm. And that in itself tends to, I mean, I'm certainly not surprised that Alan is worried about that. Just worried about that. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I could certainly imagine from I think there's a gendered piece to this, you know, from a male point of view, I can certainly imagine, you know, if you are having intense emotional relationship with some man, given that we're both heterosexual, which we are, if you were having some intentional emotional relationship with some man and weren't telling me anything about it, I would worry. Of course I would worry. Yeah. And I think what's interesting...
And I would worry where the case is reversed.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's often, it's an interesting indicator when I meet a couple where they're not worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, that says possibly something about the kind of bond that they have. Now, having said that, the idea that either one of us can have intimate conversation with other people that doesn't cross some line that we want to reserve for each other, I think is an important idea also. And so, you know, there, I've seen lots of situations of somebody being, both actually, both men and women, being so threatened by any intimacy with any kind of friend, even if it isn't, you know, like for a heterosexual couple, even if it isn't in the opposite sex. I've seen people resent that, and that's where you get into that concept of toxic jealousy. But the reason I think this question, Alan's question, has everything to do with faith, is because, you know, just starting from his questions at the end, am I wrong to be bothered by this? Well, no, I don't think he's wrong to be bothered by it. He would be wrong to be a total jerk about it and be angry and mean to his wife about it. But he's not wrong to be bothered by it. What this calls for is, well, and I'll use the word faith here, faith in the sense that, well, and actually when we talked about stability and intimacy, and he was struck by that and, you know, in reading my book. What this calls for is intimate conversation, which, if you remember from our conversations about stability and intimacy, that requires the willingness to raise anxiety.
And I think that's probably why I'd be more disturbed, you know, when I said, you know, I'd be disturbed if I found out you were doing that, only to the extent if I wasn't secure in our relationship. And it sounds like they're not secure in their relationship. He says, you know, they've lost contact. They're having intimacy issues. You know, they're leading they're leading a life that many couples have when they have children and jobs, and the whole business of just life sometimes gets so overwhelming that you lose each other. So they seem to have lost each other, and he's threatened by this other relationship that she's having, this emotional relationship. So, you know, how does he find the faith to talk to her about this and get that intimacy?
Well, yeah, and I'm just going to back up your question just a hair, because you said, how does he find the faith? And I just want to observe what's implied in your question, which is he needs the faith.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? He needs faith to do that, because faith, it's another way of saying it. Faith is what facilitates intimacy, in the very sense that if you're going to bring up something like this, you're going to be raising anxiety. You're going to be risking the relationship on some level. We don't know how his wife would respond to this. I have seen plenty of couples where the person in the wife's role in this story responds angrily or defensively. Again, that's
she's telling him toxic jealousy. So obviously she's not saying, oh, you know, just get over it, honey. It's not happening. She's, you know, toxic jealousy is something else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, she's accusing him of something. She's responding with an accusation of her own. And generally speaking, again, leaving aside the possibility that sometimes, yes, sometimes men, even women, can be very controlling and very, you know, very angry and abusive even. That's all true. But generally speaking, simply pathologizing someone's feelings doesn't usually get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of shutting down the conversation. And that's often what happens with couples. They'll try and bring it up and it just goes off the rails right away because they both panic at the other one's reaction. And so what requires faith here is the faith to really look carefully at this marriage and say, okay, you know, I love you and I don't want to lose you. And yet we're missing something that's so important that it seems like, you know, what you're doing is going elsewhere to find something. And I can respect that that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you doing it with someone else. But wow, if it's not happening, we better figure this out. And that's, you know, that's a plural. We better figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
So that requires faith.
Yeah.
Now, something we're going to get into in later, and we can kind of segue to that now, I guess, what we're going to get into in some later podcasts, and it happens to be the next chapter in my book, talks about forgiveness, which is a very related phenomenon. And in fact, the way I describe forgiveness in my book is tied directly to the concepts of faith. And so when I talk about actually three steps to forgiveness, and I'm not going to, we won't put in spoilers about that. You can tune into the podcast when we talk about that. But they're tied into these three kinds of faith, this notion of faith in your own validity and faith in your ability to handle what happens, or resilience, and faith in the big picture, this sense that, no, we have purpose, where life is meaningful and everybody's life is meaningful. And so once you start from that assumption, then it gives you the courage to raise anxiety if you have to and actually have intimate conversation.
Right. Well, thank you. And Alan, I hope this helps you. And I hope you and your wife can have some meaningful conversations around this. And to our other listeners, we would love it if you would write in questions, if you've got questions about your relationships, and if you have topics for suggestions for us, please email us at bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you do that, when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you go to the podcast tab, first of all, you'll be able to listen to all of our various episodes from there if you wish. And also, you will note that we're asking for suggestions for folks to interview. We've had a bunch of really neat interviews. Mm-hmm. I've just so enjoyed them, and clearly so have our listeners. We are lining up some additional ones, some very exciting. Well, they're all exciting. I don't know. How could I choose among my children? You know, they're all very exciting interviews lined up, and so we'll be talking about that. And so, Judy, why don't you talk about what some of the topics will be in our upcoming episodes? I'm not saying what our next episode will be per se, because it's going to depend on our schedule of interviews.
Right.
But here are some of the topics coming
up. Okay. Yeah. So, as you mentioned, we'll be talking about forgiveness. And in addition to that, we'll also be talking about healing from infidelity, pros and cons of marriage, and more. So subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or your favorite podcast site so you won't miss any of them.
And when you do that, again, please rate us and comment and, you know, the kind of things that spread the word. As we mentioned before, this podcast is based on my book, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And you can find that anywhere books are sold, mm-hmm. and you can find it in various formats as well. So we hope you will get that. And of course, always interested in people's reactions to that as well. So we're looking forward to that. So until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.